For the most part, when I read the Bible, I read it looking for narrative because I love stories, especially sacred stories. I love the book of Genesis, for example, because Genesis has lots of tales about flawed people who managed to be faithful despite all of their frailties. And I love the Gospels when they tell the accounts of what Jesus did, how he healed folks and worked miracles and was faithful even unto death. I like Jesus' teachings too, especially when he's telling parables, which usually are great stories. So I love sacred stories. But sometimes when I read the Bible, I get stuck on a detail, something that seems small but that takes on huge significance to me, and sometimes that nagging detail prevents me from enjoying or even seeing the larger story that is happening. And that has been my relationship with this morning's lesson from the book of Acts. The book of Acts tells a story of the churches spread from Jerusalem to Rome, from the city of God to the city of Caesar. And there are lots of really great stories in the book of Acts, stories I probably should read more. And this morning's lesson tells one of these stories, but it's a story I've never admired as a story, because for several years now, when I've read the 16th chapter of Acts, I've been sort of fixated on a single detail that is really interesting to me. It's a detail that I believe may be a key that most readers miss, a detail that might be helpful in understanding the early years of the Christian church. But my fixation on that detail has caused me to miss the narrative, the story. But let me tell you the detail that's fascinated me for a long time. In the book of Acts, Lydia, the woman who Paul meets in the city of Philippi, she is the first person on the European continent to become a Christian. Now, historically, it's entirely possible and improbable that someone in Europe became a Christian before Lydia, but the author of the book of Acts, who's traditionally understood to be St. Luke, the same guy who wrote the gospel, Luke presents Lydia as the first European Christian. And ever since I've noticed that fact, that the first European Christian was a woman, I've suspected it must be an important detail, especially since the first African Christian mentioned in Acts was a eunuch. The identities of the first Christians in Africa and Europe seems important to me because in first century Judaism, Judaism as it would have been practiced by Luke and Paul and Jesus, neither women nor eunuchs were considered worthy of a place in the inner circles of religious practice, participation, and leadership. So to have the Christian church on two of the three known continents at the time be started by marginalized folks, that seems important to me. And it makes sense that Luke, the author of Acts, would tell a story such that the African and European churches were started by folks ordinarily silenced by religion. This is the same Luke who wrote a gospel that tells the Christian story such that the women at the beginning, in the story of Christmas, the women get all the best lines. In fact, the first man who says anything in the Gospel of Luke is Zacchaeus, the father of John the Baptist. And when he says something, he immediately gets struck dumb and can't say anything else for the next 9 months. Luke loved to give voice and place to those ordinarily silenced and marginalized. And yet, I've never actually come across a biblical scholar who's commented on Lydia's place as the first European Christian. Scholars talk about how she was a wealthy woman. They notice that her household was not described as belonging to her husband, but to her. This means that she was a successful businesswoman on her own terms, which was not unheard of, but still remarkable and noteworthy at the time. But I've been looking for a biblical scholar who would help me think about the fact that Lydia is the first European Christian. And I want someone who will help me reflect on what it means for the place of women in Western Christianity, that the first Western Christian was Lydia, a woman. So I decided to see what John Calvin had to say about this passage. Calvin's commentaries, it's strange, you might not think Calvin would notice women, but Calvin's commentaries are very detail-oriented. Calvin can write for pages on a single conjunction. And he loves detail so much that reading Calvin can make a person feel like the Bible is an encyclopedia and not a collection of holy human stories. But the first thing Calvin did when he wrote his commentary on the story of Lydia is to point out a narrative arc in the story, a narrative arc that I completely missed. Calvin points out, and I love him for this, Calvin points out that Paul went to the city of Philippi in Macedonia because he had a dream in which he saw a man beckoning him to cross over to Europe. Paul responded to that dream of a man with faithfulness. He made the journey from somewhere in what today is Turkey across the Bosphorus Strait into Macedonia to the city of Philippi. And it was Paul's custom to meet first with Jewish folks in the cities where he was starting churches. And in Philippi, he assumed that he could find the Jewish gathering outside the city by the river. And when he went there, he didn't find the man he had seen in the dream. In fact, he didn't find men at all. Paul found women outside the city, and not necessarily Jewish women. The text is silent on this matter. Well, this would have been a challenge to Paul's religious sensibilities. But Paul was still faithful to his vision. He preached his message to the women, and Lydia started the European church. For Calvin, the point of this story is the wonderful narrative of surprise. And the message derived from this story might go something like this. Just because you have discerned a divine call to do some kind of work for the kingdom, that doesn't mean you're in charge. God may surprise you. After all, we live in a world of wonders. I find Calvin's observations to be really compelling and helpful as I think about what it means to be faithful in a world of surprises. A world in which we are called in ways we cannot imagine or foretell. Consider, for example, the faithfulness with which members of this congregation have worked to weave LGBTQ folk into the fabric of our denomination. We've worked to change the Presbyterian Church's position on the ordination of out gay men and lesbians, and we've been involved in the work of getting the church to embrace marriage equality. And in this work, we have been part of a successful movement. And as I've looked to the future, discerning what might be next for us, I have expected that our efforts would move away from fighting for things like equal rights and inclusion, and we'd move primarily into a supportive role, perhaps helping queer youth as they come out to their families and to their churches. And that work still needs to happen, but suddenly we're starting to see states pass reactionary laws. And now we're talking about who gets to use which bathrooms. And suddenly we're right back into the place where our advocacy in the realm of equal rights is needed again. Only this time it's not in the church. It's in the public square. And that comes as a surprise to me. But dearly beloved, the call of God deals in the currency of surprise. As Western Christians, we are heirs to a tradition that started not with the conversion of men as would be expected, but with the conversion of women, which was a surprise. Not only that, we're part of a faith tradition whose first adherent on the African continent was someone whose sexuality was ambiguous, not something you'd expect. Weaving marginalized folk into the fabric of our faith communities, it's in our DNA. Now, that'll come as a surprise to a lot of folks. It's a surprise for people who want congregations that are homogeneous and exclusive and predictable. But our God is a God of surprises. And that is good. Now, if I'm right about Lydia, if there is significance and meaning in the fact that the first European Christian was a woman, then I suspect her story may be for us a vision similar to the vision seen by Paul in his dream. Lydia's story may be calling us to expand on Paul's surprising ministry in Philippi, such that we're not just being a church that listens to leaders like Lydia, but we're doing more. We're active and working for a world where women and girls are as healthy and powerful and educated and wealthy and as influential as men and boys. That may be our calling. And if it is, we should pursue the calling, even if it means we have to travel and have adventures and meet new people. And if we're faithful in following our vision, we must remember that we don't get to control the call. It is God who beckons. And when God leads us, the road ahead may be filled with surprises, which is bad news if you want always to be in control. But if you want to live in a world of wonder and beauty and joy, dearly beloved, the God of surprises is a God who brings good news indeed. In a few minutes, we'll be observing the sacrament of Holy Communion, and when we do, I pray you will come to this sacred feast knowing that you come as an heir to the faith that was formed early on by Lydia and by her household. Come in anticipation of the day when churches everywhere will remember God's prompting and God's call to build a church in which a surprising and beautiful array of humanity is woven into the cloth of God's kingdom. Amen.